freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a Brenner.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Well, here we go. Another Brock and Salk podcast. Good morning, sir. How are you? It's good to be with you today.
I'm doing great. Salky, I'm doing great. It was nice catching up with you a little bit. It's nice to know that, like Pete Carroll in 2018, you made a plant-based turn in your life.
I have not had meat in a week.
Yep.
How about that? I don't think I was telling Heather that other than when I hurt my hand and was in the hospital for a full month and essentially didn't eat, I don't think I've ever gone a week without eating meat. In my life. I mean, I can't imagine I would have. Why would I have?
Right. Right.
I haven't eaten any meat. Now, I have eaten egg. I've had, like, hard-boiled eggs. But other than that, which I guess is technically, it's vegetarian but not vegan, so I haven't been vegan. But no meat, no cheese, no dairy in a week.
Inflammation down, arthritis down,
I don't know.
Family down.
I don't feel any of those things now. I've been, for those who don't know, I've been doing this green smoothie diet. It's a lot of frozen fruit and
kale.
Leafy greens. Yeah, kale, spinach, and like mixed greens. That's sort of what you make your smoothies out of. And it's great. I love it. Man, it's been unbelievable. Honestly, I do feel good in terms of like stomach and weight and all that. I don't know. It's been good. No meat.
Look good. Feel good. Now you got to talk good.
I can't wait I tell you what, though. I can't wait to have some chicken breast tomorrow night. This thing ends 10 days tomorrow night. I'm definitely going to have a little chicken to ease my way back into this. So Saturday was one of those days in a long time where you have Seahawks and Mariners going on at the same time. The remote gets its workout. And unlike some previous years, and certainly the last couple of years, it was not like, well, easy choice. Right. Mariners are done. And so, you know, whatever, whoever's pitching doesn't wasn't like that. Right. You got a game that absolutely matters as they're battling and against the Toronto Blue Jays, a really good team that's right in the thick of things with them. And so that ended up being a really great game. We'll talk a little bit more about them in a moment. We'll start with the Seahawks just because it's been so long since they had played. I've been really struggling with like the best way. That wasn't the best Seahawks game I've seen.
Do you remember when you and I did a daily show?
Yes.
And there were times maybe we finished a segment and we both looked at each other, especially when the clocks got changed. We had like a 24-minute segment.
Right.
And it got done and we kind of looked at each other and we're like, oh my gosh, that was like negative.
That wasn't good.
That was 24 minutes of negativity. I don't think anybody likes 24 minutes of negativity.
Right.
I don't think anybody wants to hear that. Like just check to self a little bit, kind of had a look at each other like, I mean, I know that was honest.
I know,
that's really how we felt.
I heard you Monday, so
yes.
I know how you felt about the game. And it was a tough watch, man. And it's not the Seahawks' fault. I mean, it's not like the players' fault. They didn't play any of their players.
No. What was it? Fourth most in the league as far as sitting guys?
It started like the fourth quarter of a preseason game and then went from there. So that's a challenge, I think, for any viewer to truly commit to. And, you know, kudos to your buddy Kurt and kudos to Wyman. They're doing the best they can and trying to keep people engaged. It's a tough watch when you're not playing anyone that you recognize or that you're anxious to see for the most part. So I have some sympathy for it. You want me to start? I'll start positive.
Okay.
I'll start positive. Are you ready?
Yes.
Honestly, the best thing about that game was seeing the full crowd. Just seeing everyone in a football stadium, especially a new stadium like that, fan base that was off the charts, pumped. I thought Kurt and Dave did a great job of getting us psyched for what it's going to be like here in another couple weeks when you have a real game. I know you're going to have preseason this week, but when you have a regular season game at Lumen Field and what that'll be like and the energy, I thought that was probably the highlight for me.
Well, I think I told you guys this last week or maybe the week before when we had our Fox seminar that this is going to be the year of the fan.
Mm-hmm.
That Fox does an awesome job. They kind of marry the college guys with the pro guys. Pros are there first, and then we all get together, have a couple hour kind of presentation from our bosses, and then dinner and drinks and everything that follows that. And so you get a little flavor of what the NFL guys heard the previous day. Kind of bleeds into the next day and in our meetings with our personnel and management and both the NFL, the college side. I was chatting with Kirk Herbstreit last week about his new book that he has coming out. He said the exact same thing, that this is going to be the year of the fan.
Mm.
that they were not in those venues largely last year. In some places like Seattle and Green Bay, they didn't set foot in the building. And you could tell. Oakland, they didn't, or Vegas, they didn't set foot in,
right,
that,
in their new building.
New Death Star,
right.
In their new building. And so getting the chance to do that, I think you will hear that in just about every broadcast, yeah, college and pro, is they're going to let that fourth voice of the broadcast be heard, be loud, be probably more present in broadcasts than you've ever heard before.
Well, that was definitely a highlight. It was.
What do you think of that stadium?
It's very Vegas-y. I mean, like, you know how much I love Vegas. So when I'm there, I always appreciate the kitsch of Vegas. Yep. The fake flame was the most Vegas thing I've ever seen.
Did they have a role playing?
I didn't notice that, eh? Not like the Knights. No. I don't know if it was like the Knights.
They didn't have any role playing?
No, I don't. I didn't see any. And by the way, speaking of the Knights, you should know, you can't see me because we're not in the same room, but I am wearing my Kraken sweatshirt today. Whoa. I got myself a light blue, baby blue Kraken sweatshirt. That's what I got on today. Oh, yeah. Nice. Dude, I'm like more and more pumped. I've secured my ticket to opening night. I am like ready to go for October 25th here. So
love it. All right. Less than 50 days, I believe. I've seen their little countdown on Twitter.
Like, well, yeah, 50 days to the opener and then like 2 months or so until the home opener, which is
pretty cool.
Awesome.
Yes, that was a positive. Yes. So the fans were just jacked down in Vegas. We got to see fans in the stands and hear some of the noise. So that's a positive. Thank you for starting the segment.
There you go.
Positive.
I don't know if this is positive or negative. This will be more of a question for you. Should I read much into how few times they ran the ball, especially early? They ran it a total in that entire game of 14 times. Three of them were by a quarterback, so let's take those out. They ran it with their running backs, 11 times? Yes. None on their first possession. Is that a sign of what's to come?
Well, you know, you want to be a dink and dunk offense. Those four-yard completions are like running plays, right?
I don't know. Well, no. No, they're not.
No, they're not.
So what's the deal there? It seemed like when they finally scored a touchdown, I know it came on the fourth down pass, but that drive, it seemed like they started to run the ball at least a couple of times. I don't know whether that opened things up for the play action on the fourth down play or what, but I don't know. I was struck by, look, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, you and I have probably been more invested in the idea that they should run the ball still and should be more balanced than other people have, but is that what we should expect?
No, I think that was a byproduct of having a lot of guys down up front, and we're going to get in a bunch of empty formations. You're playing Gus Bradley on the other side, a D coordinator whose scheme you know inside and out and who generally is pretty base, and he was. He brought a few blitzes, and we'll get into that here in a little bit as well. But I think that was a feeling that there's just going to be a bunch of easy completions. Right, we're going to get into a bunch of these sets. We're going to run stick. We're going to have, you know, a little hitch route here, a little option route there. We're going to find a bunch of completions to get into rhythm. Mm. And we don't have a lot of guys up front. So we're not just going to just wail on people, pound people. Don't have a couple of our running backs either, correct? There was no Homer. There was no Penny. There was no Chris Carson. So you're down running backs as well. So I think that was the feeling. We got a lot of receivers.
There was also no Lockett. I guess you have more beyond Lockett.
You got more Metcalf, receivers.
And you want to get Freddie Swain.
Yeah, okay. Gino, you thought, it's a veteran guy, then get the ball out of his hand, find completions. And
why did you think that? Now, why would you think that? Is there any evidence of that?
Are we turning negative now?
Well, maybe. Okay, why would you think that? I'm
so I could start the stopwatch to make sure we don't go 20 minutes of negative.
Well,
okay, if we're starting. No, you could start. Go ahead.
No, I don't want to.
You were not a fan of what Gino's body of work was.
No, I'm not.
Yes.
I don't understand why he's here.
He's tremendously average.
Why is he here? Aren't the other guys fine? Really?
Mr. Magoo?
I'll take Mr. Magoo. At least he's got an arm and some angles, and like he could throw the ball. I don't know. He's interesting.
Angles.
Yeah, he throws the ball from odd angles.
Oh, okay.
He's angular in that way.
Good.
Yeah. I like Mr. Magoo in that way. And you know,
I thought that was just a new term that I could incorporate in. He's got an arm. He's got angles.
You should use that this year. See what happens. Yeah. Big 12 guy. You're like, great angles on this
great
kid.
Angles. Yeah, very angular. That's what you're looking for.
Dude, I swear to God that people will buy it, too, if you say it. The next thing you know, there's going to be 12 different guys out at training camp who are going to be like, all these reporters out there like, do you see how angular he is? What? Mannion? Somebody? Brock, I don't want to watch Geno Smith again.
Yeah.
I'm good.
I don't think I'm probably not going to watch him this week after the concussion.
Well, I feel bad about that. I'm not happy that he's hurt, but I don't want to watch him again. I'm good. Yeah. I'm all set there.
Yeah, he does very little for me. He's done very little for me for 3 years or however long he's been here. He's a Charlie Whitehurst. He's another one you can go ahead and rub in my face and say, how did you only make it 6 years? Charlie made it 10.
Right.
Gino's like, this is year 9. I mean, it's just, he brings to me very, very little to the table other than just a veteran presence. Obviously, Russell must like him. Pete must like
him. Mannion's got a veteran presence.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and some experience in this offense and hopefully it doesn't fall down as much. I don't know. I just Gino's not the guy for me. I understood it when there was so much read option, but he didn't do that well either.
No,
he's not good at read option. I think there was a perception really maybe a that he did. Yeah. And I don't know if there's time because he was in West Virginia and the spread or what, but he's not good at that. I don't buy the Geno Smith thing at all. And I think I would prefer to see somebody else back there. Anyway, you still haven't really answered my question. Should I? You're saying no. I shouldn't. No. I should not read anything into the fact that they didn't run the ball. Okay.
No, you should not.
Okay, good.
I think when the whole crew is up front and healthy and you play everybody and Gabe Jackson and Posick and Dwayne and Damian and Shell and those guys are built to move people and they're going to move people. And if you know anything from this coaching tree, what was appealing to it, I think when Pete made the hire with Shane Waldron, is this tree knows the importance of that run, mm-hmm. setting the table. For everything else, marrying every other concept off of that run.
Well, so and Russ is so good at play action, and they've got the right horses for all of that. So, all right. The stars on defense from this game were Alton Robinson and Rasheem Green. Now, we have some level of history with both of these players, different levels. Did you buy what you saw from either of them?
I thought both of them played hard, especially Alton Robinson. Played every snap hard, played a lot of football. I would throw Daryl Taylor in there, too. I think all of those guys at the point of attack. I like Daryl at times really being pretty violent, setting an edge and squeezing some of the run game. That was super positive. Yeah, I think Alton and Rasheem.
Let's focus on him for a moment because he's the guy we don't have any history with, and he's
first guy's played a game.
I got to be honest, I'm counting on him a lot more than the other two this year. He's a big, he was their second round pick a year ago, missed the entire season. What did you see specifically from a guy in Daryl Taylor that I think is being asked to really step up into a big role?
Yeah, I saw a guy that was willing to be physical for the first time, putting pads on and playing tackle football in a couple years. I think you were curious. I was curious. I think Pete and everybody there was curious to see because they don't do live tackling out there at the VMAC. You can't afford to do it. You do very few, even good on good. And you've not had Dwayne Brown and for him to contend with even in one-on-one drills. So yeah, to see him, as I said, set an edge, which is an important part of playing that position on the line of scrimmage. He was on the line of scrimmage a bunch. I thought that was, for the first time out, pretty impressive. I think the head coach thought so too. Did he read and react and make every play? Absolutely not. Is there going to be a very high learning curve? And is he going to have to just sprint up that steep slope right away, right from the onset? Yes, he is. And it will be by the fire hose. He's going to have to learn under some fire. There's going to be some misreads. There's going to be some slow to some things as the game picks up against number ones. Remember, it wasn't only Seattle that played all backups.
Right, no kidding.
Oakland did too.
So, but he's a guy that you were a little concerned about after the draft, right? He wasn't someone you were specifically high on and kind of
wasn't looking real productive in college.
Exactly. So, yep. So what did, when you watch film of him, were you impressed? Were you more impressed? Did it ease any of your fears about him?
It was a positive first step.
Good.
So if I'm going to be positive, it was a positive first step. It was not neutral. It was not negative. It was not yikes. This is just not, this guy's getting washed down. He's getting blown off the ball. He's not physical. But again, this is not against their number ones.
No, I get that.
That little bit slower speed. This is probably the first, probably why Pete decided to play him and Alton and Rasheem and those guys as much as he did, is even for the other two that did play, and Rasheem's played a bunch of number one ball. Obviously, last year, Alton had 4 sacks, had a good first rookie campaign. But this was you're playing their backups. You guys should have a presence. You should play very, very hard and make your presence known and felt. And I think all three of those guys did.
So what do I
make? To me was the biggest positive.
Well, good.
Game.
So what do I make of Rasheem Green, a guy that I've watched now? This will be his third or fourth year. I've never been impressed by what I've seen at any point during that stretch. And then he has a pretty good first game of preseason. Is that to suggest he was always young and that was sort of the excuse that's been made for him? Is, okay, well, this guy's a little younger than he's supposed to be. He came out early, this and that. Is there any reason to buy?
I'm not jumping. No, okay, I'm good. Not jumping to any great
not a good. I wish I could, but I'm not.
Correct. Yeah, no. Okay. No, this is against backups. You're not facing the number one guys. And, you know, 3 years into this league, he should have enough in his tool belt that he does have a sack, that he does have tackles for loss, that you hear his name called, which for a bunch of games and a bunch of times, you've never heard that. So it was nice to see him take advantage of that opportunity. Alton in the same way. This was a game those guys should have maximized their opportunities against backups up front, and they did. And I'm not going to say it's nothing. It's a positive, but by no means am I grabbing my pom-poms and saying, oh, yeah, week one in Indy, get ready, man. It's going to be the Alton Robinson, Rasheem Green show.
Why didn't we see anybody play?
It's where the league is going, man. This is where the league is trending. This is where your friends in the analytical and the data departments upstairs have played a significant role in getting into the ears of their coaches. You know, we talked about it. It's 2018 that Pete made that plant-based turn, right? And if you would have told Pete in 2018...
Me and Pete both make it our plant-based turn.
When you said to Pete, what do you mean Earl Thomas is returning punts? Ugh. What are you doing? This is the preseason. What are you talking about? You don't put your stars out there to return punts. And remember, Pete, like, Mike, we don't think that way. I don't know what you're thinking
right.
is.
But we don't think about what think. Could go wrong. He only thinks about what he's set up many times.
Yes.
It's been true in a lot of ways. He tries not to think about what could go wrong and tries to think about what will go right.
So I don't.
It's weird that doesn't always translate to his fourth down decision making.
No.
There's some inconsistency there, but we try not to ask. There's no upside in finding out.
So I don't think this is a, hey, we're worried about the downside. We're not going to play these guys. I think this is 100% dictated by the people upstairs in their load management and in their health and recovery saying these 12 reps are not worth it. We have a bounty of data now over the years to show you, Pete, and it's what these other coaches are looking at, and it is why they are not playing their starters. Mm-hmm. That those reps on Monday and Tuesday,
because it's
and
not
Wednesday,
like it was going to be the entire game or even a half anyway. It was going to be a series, and you're saying that the limited reps in one series aren't
correct.
Worth it.
And if somebody gets dinged up a little bit and they miss a day of practice, those 60 reps, those 80 reps, much more valuable than these 12. And oh, by the way, it's not even good on good. So what kind of evaluation are you getting if they're going up against backups and they're not even going up against one? So, and we're also going to add another game to the season. And all we have learned in the NFL is that the team that wins at the end is usually the team that avoids the injuries. And it's about, you know, not having the attrition and being able to sustain now over not 16 games, but 17 games. And I'm sorry, it's just not worth it.
Well, I guess I agree with that. I mean, I've thought about this for years and not really wanted them to play their guys. I think they're right. They shouldn't play their guys. But God, as a viewer, it's just mean.
Tough.
It's tough. Mean. And my sympathy, thoughts and prayers to the guys who've got to call the games. But it's cruel and unusual to make to build this up the way we have in the past and think about it even as a preseason game from 10 years ago.
Mike, right. Think about 10 years ago when Russell was pushing.
Right.
Matt Flynn, think about watching those games.
It mattered.
Kansas City.
Mattered
like,
a ton.
My gosh.
Absolutely.
It was incredible.
Was it the preseason game where Tyler Lockett first went off, right, and ran back some kicks? And
yes.
We were like, oh, my gosh, this kid's a revelation.
Correct.
I think those days are gone. And I'm glad the NFL's gone to three. They're going to have to go to two.
They're going to go to two.
They're going to have to.
Yep.
And I know that's a really, really rough thing for those fighting to make the team. But I think just from a viewing experience, maybe they'll go to more scrimmaging with other teams and that kind of stuff. But televising this is I honestly think it is bad for the NFL product.
Well, see, that's
bad.
The other,
it is bad advertising for your product. You may have had people who watched that game or others like it around the league in week one of the preseason and went, I guess I don't like the NFL anymore. I don't know what has happened to the league, but I don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not doing that, obviously. I know that was just a silly preseason game, and we'll find what we'll see in the regular season won't be representative. But I would be concerned if I were the NFL watching some of the product out there and saying we cannot represent our league this way.
Yes, you brought up an excellent point there. So Pete has changed and moved in this direction, something that I don't think any of us would have anticipated 5 years ago, but this is where it is going. The other thing that Pete has held strong and fast to is we don't scrimmage other teams. That's not the way that we do business. I don't want hard knocks. I don't want other people here. I don't want to go play other people, right? I mean, they've been pretty steadfast in that belief too. Well, that is counter to what a lot of people in the league are doing. You know, Denver went out and played Minnesota. They spent 3 days out there before the game. Guess what they did in those 3 days? They scrimmaged. And guess what they had? Some good on good. Now, it wasn't violent tackling into the ground, but it was quality work.
Right.
And that is what Seattle is not going to get.
Well, it sure seems more valuable than having all these preseason games at this point anyway. So, yeah, I like what the Seahawks did. Again, this is the same conversation we keep having across sports. What's good for your team is not good for the league.
Or good for the viewing experience.
Or good for the sport, right? It's great to hit a ton of home runs, strike out a lot, and walk a lot. It's not. It's great for winning, not great for baseball. It is great to not play any of your starters or real players in a preseason game, not great for the advertising of the game of football. So I'll be curious to see kind of how the league reacts to that here by the end of this preseason and over the course of the next year. What was that a corner blitz? And the play that Geno gets injured.
Yes.
Corner blitz? Is that out of bounds?
No.
Is that not what you're supposed to do during preseason? Because that was the suggestion.
Yeah, no. That was not a difficult blitz. That was a formation that kind of dictated you better be aware, especially with motion, of what could come on the weak side. And I think even the Seahawks receiver's kind of waving his arms like he could kind of sense it and feel it. For some reason, either the O-line, the left tackle, the rookie, Geno, who's played 9 years in this league, did not have that awareness. That was not, to me, out of bounds. It was 4 weeks from the weak side, a blitz that the Seahawks run a bunch where they bring a backer and a nickel back and an extra DB. And to me, that was not out of bounds at all. Mm. And I really didn't understand it. Now, it was the outcome. It was watching Geno get smashed, not only by that guy, but the right guard who gets beat. So it was a double whammy in a concussion sandwich, which is no fun and stinks for Geno. But yeah, there's got to be a little more awareness. Gus Bradley is not Wade Phillips. Gus Bradley's not Rex Ryan. This was not there's eight guys mulling around the line of scrimmage. Who's coming? Who's dropping out? How do we identify this? Some of the crazy exotic blitzes that, you know, Pittsburgh would bring. No. This was a Gus Bradley, pretty basic system. You got to be aware of 4 week to a side. That's what he likes to do. And obviously, it was a free rusher that they got a pretty good shot on Geno.
Okay, well, then what do we make of their offensive line situation? Obviously, a lot of guys didn't play, some because of injury, some because of value, and some because of hold-in. But all of this is pretty darn important because this is the biggest thing that needed to change from last year was the offensive line, right?
According to the quarterback, right?
According to him, according to anybody who watched the team, right? Yep. What did you make of the offensive line? And then, of course, as a corollary to that, what does it do to the Duane Brown situation?
Yeah, absolutely. You can make no judgment on the starting offensive line watching that. None. You can't even make a judgment on scheme because you said they didn't even run the ball. They didn't even play with any tempo. They didn't mix any of that stuff. It was as basic and vanilla as it gets. It was an opportunity more than anything to see, okay, Stone Forsyth, who's really your fourth string tackle, right? It's Duane Brown. It's Jamarco Jones. It's even Cedric Obuehi. You know, Stone is your fourth string left tackle and played like it, you know, looked like it. Looked like a sixth rounder that was thrown into the mix in a loud stadium for the first time in years that he had to play in a whole new system with his head swimming and everything else. And so I make no judgment whatsoever on the offensive line play of what's going to be playing in Indianapolis in 3 weeks. Absolutely zero, none, zilch. After those 49 snaps I watched with Geno Magoo and Sean Mannion.
Okay, but what about a left tackle?
A left tackle, you need Duane Brown. And Duane Brown knows that they need Duane Brown. And Duane Brown is flexing his leverage. And I'll tell you, I'm not necessarily, the more I thought about it, John Schneider said in pregame to Steve Rabel that, hey, we got 20. It was definitely not a shot, but it was John being John and being honest and transparent, saying, we got 21 guys, Steve, whose contracts are up at the end of the year, right? And you set precedent and you do someone's deal with 1 year left now. How many other guys
are all the time, don't they?
Not necessarily. They do it in season. KJ Wright in particular. They like to get guys done that they want to get done. They've shown a propensity to that.
They've done it before. They got Marshawn done.
They have. And I would also, the more I thought about that, who else has leverage to flex of 21 guys?
Right. That is absolutely the point. I totally agree with that.
Is it Will Disley and Gerald Everett?
Okay.
Is it Alex Collins and Rashad Penny? Is it Brandon Shell?
Right.
And honestly, I thought about the 21 guys.
There's nobody with leverage.
The only other one that could maybe flex some of that leverage is Quandre Diggs.
Okay.
That's it. So I'm not worried about all of these other guys on the final year of their deal. They all got to play. Witherspoon and Disley all got to play and show that they can be productive, difference-making NFL players, which is what Diggs and Duane Brown have shown. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I get it. You have 21 other guys. None of them are going to flex. None of them are going to hold out. None of them are, or if their agents do, it's going to be a very quick, yeah, you know, we'll talk to you in December and January. Hopefully your client stays healthy and well and is a difference maker for us, because that's what Quandre and that is what Duane have been. But you've got to get Duane done. He's got to be there.
I agree with number that. Number one in Indianapolis. You and I see this, I think, very similarly. I think that the Seahawks don't have a lot of leverage in either of these two contract fights that they have found themselves in, and they're going to need to find a way. I also think both will get done. I don't think Duane Brown needs to be a practice. I don't think he needs to play in one preseason game. I don't think he needs to attend much practice until the last week or so. Like, I just don't think that's a major concern. And maybe, Brock, that's just my, you know, listening to you talk about Walter Jones and how he didn't need it, and my assumption that if you can play that position, you can play that position. That's not to say he doesn't need to work himself into shape and all of those things, and like, I think that's valuable. I don't know that I've ever seen anybody who looks like he's in better shape to play left tackle than Duane Brown.
Agreed.
And as you're watching Andrew Whitworth dominate and be one of the best tackles in the game over
39.
Like, I just don't have a ton
of fear. I would
tend
to agree. That fights every fiber of my coach's son being, because I do think reps are important, and especially in a new system and communicating in a new language.
Of course they're important. If they weren't important, you wouldn't have them.
That's right. But he is a pretty unique talent and has shown that over a decade in this league. And last year in particular played as one of the top three tackles in the game. So if you were to say to me, if there's a guy on this roster that could maybe live without some of the pounding of preseason, who would it be? Duane Brown would be way up on that list.
All right. Well, hopefully that gets done. I continue to believe that it will, because the Seahawks need him and he wants to play football. I mean,
depends,
like,
how reasonable he is.
He'll be, I think he would be reasonable. And the Seahawks are
mega deals, and not at $10 million, but mega deals this offseason at his position.
The Seahawks,
that he could argue he played better than.
Yeah, that he understands the age and the value. I would think certainly his agent does. Now they're going to want money, and they're going to be able to point to the fact that that position can play later into their career, and point at Andrew Whitworth, and they'll be right. The Seahawks are going to have to pay some money for Duane Brown, but they have the money to spend. They have room.
They have enough.
So they should. They can.
And
do
they have
this
a lot coming after the season.
And they're going to have to, because they just don't have another option unless they're looking to make a deal for that position. And I think that would be a huge problem for them at this point.
Jamal, they got more leverage. You and I disagree on this. I think they got more leverage, and you just heard that this week, as obviously.
Well, they said they did.
Correct.
They said they have leverage. That doesn't mean
we'll
they
franchise
do.
Franchise them, and we'll go that route.
Sure, they said that.
Here's a number. I mean, you do have that. You don't have that with Duane Brown.
Well, they said that. You're absolutely right that they said those things. I don't know that they necessarily believe them.
Well, here's what I believe. I believe that same deal has been sitting on that agent's table for the last couple of weeks, and this is our final and best, and we don't mess around. And this is the way we do business. And you could talk to anybody over the last 10, 12 years. This is the way we do business. We're consistent about it. We are fair about it. We're making you the highest paid player at your position in this league. We don't make the rules in this league. That is the way that everybody plays for the structure of their caps and everything else. And we're not budging.
How will you feel about him on a franchise tag?
Well, he's got his deal this year, so he's going to have to play. So it wouldn't be franchise number this year.
Right.
It would be, here's your number this year. And oh, by the way, if you get hurt again and you tear your labrum, who knows what the market's going to say to you after this season. So do you really want to take that risk? Do you really want to play out your fifth year right now and then have us in our back pocket be able to franchise you for $13 or $14 million the following year and have every ability to do that? Is that what you really want? We're not budging. Here's our final and best offer.
I guess the point you would have to make then, and this is where maybe my argument starts to lose some water, is, hey, you'd have him for 3 years at that point at reasonable money. And that would be enough to have, I mean, meaning last year, this year, and next year would be three total years after the trade,
correct,
all at reasonable money and getting value back for him, that those 3 years would be enough to justify the two first round picks.
Correct. And there's been a lot. Well, there's just been a lot said that, wow, you don't give up that much, and you had to know ahead of time what you were going to get, and you're going to have to. And I don't disagree with any of that. Jamal Adams had to know, and now he's feeling it. Is, wow, this is an organization that doesn't mess around. They're not going to pay me more than Bobby Wagner. This is the precedent that they have set over the course of 12 years.
Yeah, but he also knows that if he complains enough, maybe he'll get traded again and find the right organization that will.
and you get traded out of Seattle and you can't make it work there, right, with the way that they do business.
I don't know. He's not trying to. I mean, if he knows that there's a team out there that will pay for him.
Yep.
I don't know. I guess the point I would make here is my main argument has been that John Schneider cannot, you know, just get a year or two out of this guy and then have it walk away. I guess Correct. After 3 years.
Yeah.
I don't like the trade. At that point, it's a bad trade, but not a fireable disaster.
Right, that's not what you want. You make that trade because you love him, and right. Pete loves him, and he's a fire starter, man. He loves to play ball.
But that's just, at that point, it's just you chalk it up as a bad risk that didn't work out, and that's okay. I'm okay. Yeah. You're like, look, GMs shouldn't get fired over taking risks that don't work out. Sometimes you're going to do that, and it won't work out. Bringing a guy in for a year or so and then having him walk away at that level of investment to me is not acceptable.
Correct.
And I guess if you start to get 3 years out of him, you're bordering on at the very least acceptability for me. Still a lot. It's still not a good deal at that point, but I still maintain that he will get done and that both of these deals will end up getting done here in the next couple of weeks. And we're going to see a very different Seahawks team than we watched the other. And thank God.
Yes.
I think we'll all be very relieved that that's not the Seahawks team we
Hey, you know what, man? That was like 30 minutes. That was genuinely pretty positive.
I think it was.
Yeah.
You want to be super positive? Because we do talk a lot about Ascend, right? And the big old views that they've got when you're up there in Bellevue.
Uh-huh.
But have we like talked enough about like their stake selection, the elite stake selection of what
you
can get
there?
No, you
have not done that.
I don't feel like I've talked enough about
it. You spent more time on fancy words and egg, like caviar eggs and everything else.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about like their steak. Here's some of the options on the steaks, okay? Prime American steaks, Angus beef, wet aged, Brock. Not dry aged, but they go wet aged for 28 days from New York Strip to filet mignon.
They're more steam room than sauna.
They also go dry-aged American steaks.
There you go.
Dry-aged for a minimum of 45 days, bone-in ribeye to 45-ounce Seahawk chop. They've got the luxury Wagyu Angus crossbreed steaks. Now, I've had one of these. They're pretty good. It's like the best American ranches mixed with the best Japanese ranches. And they got everything there from outside skirt steak to a cap of ribeye. It's legit. You got Kurogi Pure Breed A5 Wagyu.
Get out of here.
That's A5 Wagyu filet mignon. And then this is the other one I've had. This is the best thing they have there. It's pretty ridiculous. Let me see if I can get that. Again, you got a fancy name here. But the Miyazaki Prefecture A5 Wagyu. This is the world's best A5 Wagyu filet mignon. I had this one. They're one of the first restaurants Ascend was in the U.S. to get the Miyazaki Prefecture regularly available on the menu. And what it is it's these cows that are fed. I think I have the right one. This is what I ate when I was there. They eat olive husks, like exclusively.
Okay.
And all I can tell you is the meat that I was served tasted exactly like a mix of steak and bacon. It was like the perfect, and you don't need much of it. You don't want to eat like a ton of it. It'd be too much. But it was ridiculously, it was probably the best thing I've ever eaten.
Wow.
Yeah, it was that kind of good. Dude, getting hungry. Plant-based turn this week. Come on. Getting a little hungry. Make reservations right now to indulge in the Northwest's elevated steak experience. Go to ascendprime.com. All at Ascend Prime, elevated dining. All right, Brock, let's also, as we said, want to take a look at where the Mariners were at. Because honestly... This has been so much fun. I find myself torn. Somebody was getting after me on Twitter the other day and saying that, oh, Salk, you said wins don't matter this year, and now here you are excited about wins. Like, I don't know that those two things are contradictory to each other. I don't think that getting to the playoffs this year is the be-all, end-all. That doesn't mean I don't want them to.
Right.
Right? I mean, like, of course I want them to. Of course I want them to exceed expectations. Of course I want them to be better faster and make the playoffs. Like, I don't see how those two things are necessarily at cross purposes with each other if and when they fall short this year. And I think it's likely still that they will, but I'm not giving up hope yet. I'm not going to be mad at this team. I'm going to be psyched that they're right there, poised and on the verge and ready for what they're supposed to do next year. And oh, by the way, in the meantime, Brock, while they nearly made the playoffs, and we'll see what happens, they end up with the number one rated farm system in all of baseball, according to Baseball America. Number one. And that does not include Kelnick or Gilbert or Fraley or Trammell, any of those guys have lost their prospect status. Mm-hmm. So they are the best farm system in baseball, according to the number one rate. I mean, Baseball America is generally what you look at. I'm not saying they're perfect, but they're the standard. And they're number one without those guys.
And you were one time the worst.
3 years ago. List. As recently as 2018, you were dead last.
Correct. And number two on that list this year, the Baltimore Orioles, who continue to be just in this free-for-all of losing and losing and losing and not getting right. And at a time where you have now ascended to that top spot, your product on the field is competitive.
Yeah, you now have a, that's a great way of looking. You have a competitive major league product and the best minor league system in baseball.
I think it was Saturday night. I was at a wedding. Ooh, your favorite haunt. I sent you a picture.
I know, at the Ridge. It looked beautiful a week before the Open. Yes. Unbelievable.
Down the 18th fairway. Beautiful. Nice little hot. I think it was about 90 degrees. So it was a little warm one for an outdoor wedding, but just absolutely stunningly beautiful. And stayed at the Salish, one of my favorite spots, right next to it. Got back in time to see the Mariners on a Saturday night find a way to win. I think it was that night that you tweeted, right? And it was almost just a... Gosh, it wasn't I love this team. It is
kind of marvel at them.
Yes, that was your word. You just kind of marvel at their competitive grit.
I find myself shaking my head in amazement at them a lot, in a yes. good way. And I honestly, it's just like, man, I can't believe that. Another walk-off walk. Another walk-off wild pitch.
Home runs. Oh, now he does,
actually. Ty France hit a home. I mean, like,
of course he does.
Their ability to stay yes. with teams and then find a way at the end, their patience at the ends of games, they do control the zone at the end of the game. They really do. That's exactly what Jerry wanted to build, is a team that would control the zone. And when you watch them at the end of games, they're remarkably patient, and it pays off.
And they are. I think they're in this spot. I've tried to think about that, of just kind of marveling at them and everything else. And maybe I'm totally biased, and you could tell me, no, you're actually wrong on that, because statistically they're this and they're that. Blah, 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 blah. But as I sit there and I watch this team now, what, almost 120 games into the season? As you're sitting here getting near the final poll, the final quarter poll of the year, they're pretty competent now with their starting pitching. And the number of times Scott Service has said to you and me and mm-hmm. before those businessman matinees and everything else, just sitting there talking shop with him, and you've got a bullpen, former major league bullpen arm, and making the decisions. You got a former Mariner or former major league catcher right there. Those two, Indipoto and Service, kind of guiding this thing. It's not a surprise. It's pitching, it's pitching, it's pitching, it's pitching. And oh, by the way, I think what excites me the most about that number one standing is it's Kirby, it's Hancock, it's Emerson, it's those guys now ascending to double A as well. But their starting big league pitching's been competent. The last month, Marco has turned it around. The trade is for your lefty has been effective.
He's good. This kid Anderson's pretty good.
Yeah, Tyler's been a good player. Kikuchi is, you know, up and down or whatever. Maybe Logan's hitting a little bit of a wall, but you have been, Flexen's been
giving
awesome.
Yourself a chance. You've given yourself a chance
to compete.
Yeah, and you're going to get a couple
Baltimore
guys back.
Baltimore yep. and these other teams whose farm systems are in the top five, top 10, they don't have competent starting pitching that you do that at least gives yourself a chance to compete in mm-hmm. every series you play.
Yes.
And even in New York, where, yeah, you lost 3 of 4. Everyone was a one-run game.
Yeah.
And you played a 10-1-1-run games. That's hard to say. And, of course, you're going to regress a little bit to the mean, and you're not going to play 800 ball in one-run games. But you're in those one-run games because you've got fairly competent starting pitching.
You're 100% right.
That has made you competitive over the course of the three quarters of the year.
Totally agree. It's funny when you're saying things that are hard to say. I brought up the name the other day at home just to laugh about
Seth
it. Yes, I said it at home, and my whole family, like Avery, was dying laughing about it. I was like, yeah, they used to have this guy, Seth Smith. And she was like, what? No. That's terrible. I was like, I know he's a good player, too. Good lefty, but you just couldn't say his name. Just brutal to try to say his name. Yes. All of that is true, Brock, with where they're at this year. And I don't know if they're going to make the playoffs. They may just be, you know, you see it even over the weekend, right? You win 2 of 3. You win the series against Toronto, but you only pick up one game because of it. Yes. And I think you may end up running out of time, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to watch every single one of these games and hope that they're able to somehow get past the 3 or 4 teams ahead of them and sneak their way in here, because I think that'd be a blast. The best news, though, is that while that is happening, they have the number one ranked farm system in baseball. And so they can do a few different things. I think probably 4 different things with that artillery that they now have in the minor leagues. One, you have a better chance for hitting on a star. Right. We don't know that any one of these guys is going to work out. Right. There's no guarantee with this stuff, obviously. But because you have so many chances at a star, you can survive a few flameouts if they happen just because of the sheer number of opportunities you're giving yourself, chances for success, right?
Yes, and these are homegrown. Right, yeah.
It's mostly homegrown at this point.
Correct. Julio Rodriguez is homegrown. Yep. Kirby, Hancock, Emerson, I don't know if any of those are ace, you know, kind of move the needle star power
Kirby
guys.
Kirby's in that level of top 15 prospect that certainly could become an ace. And then obviously you got Noelvi Marte, who's a few years away. But you're giving yourself chances to have stars. They may not all get there. One may flame out entirely. You may end up with another Kyle Lewis who gets hurt a lot, or a Danny Holson who never plays because he's injured. But you also may end up with a guy that turns into be a Felix Hernandez or a legitimate superstar, and maybe something in the middle with a Kyle Seager kind of player. I don't know yet, but you're giving yourself chances with as many good players or great players at the top of the rankings that you have. So that, I think, is a great thing. That's number one. Number two, you can create competition. Baseball's not football. This is not compete every day. But I do like the idea of going with the players that earn it, right? Because you've got so many outfielders, Jake Fraley was never considered to be at the top of this list of guys, but he's earned it, at least at the beginning. Now we'll see whether or not he maintains it, but he's going to have to maintain it, or else somebody else on this list is going to come take his job.
Yep.
I think that's the way it should be. Maybe it'll be Kyle Lewis when he comes back. Maybe it'll be Julio Rodriguez next year. I don't know. But if Kelnick doesn't eventually materialize, somebody else will be there waiting to give them a chance as well. And I think that's probably a good thing.
And isn't that the greatest benefit of having a deep, deep farm system? And haven't you seen that from other organizations? And I know you're going to get to this eventually here, that the pieces that it gives you to be able to move. And, you know, this isn't, we got one star. No, we got a bunch of them. And we got a bunch of really good players. And they're competing their tails off because they all want to get to the big leagues. So they're all being fairly productive in the minor leagues. Yes. So that if you want to become an even more attractive trade chip, I think it would be to your advantage to be highly, highly competitive and have those guys, you know, pushing it to the max to try to get to the bigs and be at their best.
That's very much in line with my third thing, Brock, which is you've changed the culture. The culture of your organization changes when you have that many great prospects all coming up together. They all believe that there's something is being built, hopefully. Right? I mean, this is the work Scott's done at the major league level and the talent that you've acquired. Hopefully this is enough. Hopefully, I don't know. Hopefully this is enough to overcome the Mather comments from before the year, the reputation at times of the Seattle Mariners. They've never built talent quite like this. All the way, they have both high-end and depth talent. That hopefully really starts to change the perception inside baseball, inside the players' area of how the team is viewed. Number four, you have organizational depth. So you need it to compete. Guys get hurt, right? Players, whatever. You're going to need to bring guys up for stretches at a time, and you do have that organizational depth that you need at the big league level eventually. And then finally, Brock, you got the chips.
You said four.
I know. I actually had five. I'm sorry. Okay. You had the chips. You have the chips to buy the ace or the vets or whatever it is you need to make this real. And it won't entirely deplete your system. So I think by this offseason, we're going to start to see that. And I think it's important because having a great system is good. It's important. It's not the same thing as winning.
No.
But it does give you the license you need to go for it. And I think they will start to have that in this offseason. In fact, I would say it demands that you do. And if you look at the two teams, and I know you have a third one, but the two teams I focus most on have been the Cubs and the Astros. And what they did, if you look at the group that they had come up, and I'm thinking of all these big-time guys now that you start to feel good about with the Mariners. The Cubs had Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, and Schwarber, right? Mm-hmm. Others do. At least Rizzo, Bryant, Baez, and Schwarber. And then they went and spent for John Lester. The Astros had Springer, Altuve, Bregman, Correa, and they traded for and then spent on Verlander. So they both went out and got themselves an ace. They also both added some mid-level veterans who paid off, right? In Chicago, Ben Zobrist, Jason Hayward, John Lackey. In Houston, Brian McCann, Josh Reddick, Carlos Beltran. Those are just some examples. I could probably come up with more. Luis Valbuena. They hit on some mid-level veterans that performed for them, and they went out and got a high-level ace, spent money on it. The Mariners are going to have to do both of those things. That, to me, are the next couple of things that they're going to need to do. Go spend on somebody that is a difference maker and bring in a couple of those veterans that take the place and really augment what you're doing with your group that is coming up together.
Yes. And as you were speaking to that, I just can't happen but to reflect on the Cubs way, Tom Verducci's book that he wrote on Theo and Madden and the Cubs and the way they went about doing it. And Theo was pretty clear. We need young stars. You mm-hmm. have to have just
it.
As the Astros had Correa and Altuve and those guys you mentioned, you have to have young stars. You can't do this. You can't compete. You can't win at all unless you have homegrown stars. And Kelnick is taking significant steps. Julio Rodriguez, by everyone's account across the globe, and what he did at the Olympics and what he's doing ascending now to AA, you know, those are probably the two that you point to, kind of your first point of star power. You know, you have those young pieces, and then it's exactly right. Now you have to supplement them, and you have to spend.
So what if, so you and I are on the same page. What if they're not ready yet? What if this isn't actually the off season? And if you look at where the Cubs were at and the Astros, those guys had been up and producing a little bit more. They weren't in double and triple A. I mean, a lot of these guys are in double A. That doesn't mean they can't be here next year. I think that most of the double A rotation will pitch in the big leagues within a calendar year.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean the beginning of next year. I think we'll see Hancock, Kirby, Williamson, all three of those guys in the big leagues, at least for a look, within the next calendar year. But that doesn't mean they're like helpful and important next year. And there's a couple other guys in there. I forget some of the other names, but I think you're going to see every one of them.
Okay.
I don't, you know, could you make an argument? I'm just theorizing here. I know there's Mariners fans who are going to like crucify me for this, but that you should actually wait one more year before you go and spend?
I don't know. I think this team is, I think in some ways, the next 40 games will tell you a little bit about that. How much of a wall has Logan Gilbert hit mm-hmm. about 80 innings in? You know, is this real with Jared Kelnick? Mm-hmm. You know, Titus told him after the All-Star game, the Mariners came to Colorado. Ty got his autograph, said, hey, you know, it really helped me this year to get more upright in my stance in the batter's box. And, you know, since then, obviously, Jared's been a different guy. So Titus and Jared had that conversation
obviously, yes.
on third baseline. So you can give Titus a lot of credit in this. Is this real? Does he give the next 40 games a little bit like the last 30 games have been? Is this September like his August? And, oh, my gosh, this guy has found it. And you know, he's seeing the ball and he's doing damage and he's hitting it, spraying it everywhere. And right. I mean, is that a
yeah,
real
I think
step?
Those are,
is Marco and
right.
Kikuchi and, you know,
well,
the
that's
rest
what I was going to say
Flexen?
Is do you have a little bit more not older veteran, but like guys that are now big leaguers that you trust? Is Ty France, Chris Flexen, JP Crawford,
correct.
Abraham Toro? Is that enough to say Mitch Haniger to say, okay, we're ready? And it might be. And I would argue
they
that it
were
is.
Enough this year at the trade deadline for them to make 4.5 moves.
Right.
Okay. We talked a lot about that in May and June and leading up to the trade deadline, and they were enough. They forced the hand enough to say, hey man, we've earned the opportunity for you to add to this
and
team.
You should have a significant amount of money to spend. My understanding and expectation is that Kyle Seager's not going to be here next year. He's going to walk away. That saves you $20 million when you put Abraham Toro at third base or at second base instead of Seager. In addition to all the money you've saved through Cano and everything else over the past few years, go buy an ace.
Yep.
It's time. It's yep. time to go figure out, whether it's through a trade and sign or just a signing, you need somebody who's going to be at the top of this rotation as a veteran. And I'm not to say I don't like Marco. Good pitcher. And on a championship team, he's your second or third guy. By the way, that's exactly what the Astros did. Dallas Keuchel, good pitcher. Right? Liam McHugh, good pitcher.
Yep.
Who's the kid who kills him? McCullers, good pitcher. Kills the Mariners with that curveball. All good pitchers. You know what they did? They went out and got Garrett Cole, Justin Verlander eventually, mm-hmm. because you need great pitchers to make sure those other really good pitchers slot in. That's how you win championships, and that needs to be the Mariners' goal.
So after that wedding on Saturday, Molly and I were driving, and as I said, listening to some of the Mariner game, and I said to her, gosh, you know, these cycles go up and down. It's been a long cycle down, unfortunately, for the Mariners. But she remembered. She was in college at the UW in the mid-90s. And when I was drafted to Seattle and the Seahawks were the afterthought, and it was everything going on, as we've told you time and again, it's the then Safeco Field, that was the spot to be. It was a Mariner town. Any of my old Seahawks teammates will tell you that. In that era, it was like, my gosh, you can't go anywhere without people talking about the Mariners. And they have the opportunity, Mike, to ascend to continue to climb. And this has been an ascension of a year. And I would think, man, if you're the owner who really wants to win, mm-hmm. who's a hometown guy himself, who had been a, you know, a minority owner, and now for Mr. Stanton, this is his club. If this continues this way, and this team is competitive through September, Mike, and they are, you know, even within five games of the wild card, while having the number one farm system in the league, this is an offseason where you go and you have that the two-letter word, What do you need? What do you need? And it starts with, if this thing continues, starts with extending Jerry and Scott, period, end of story, something you've been clamoring for now for months. Mm-hmm. But then it is, what do you want to do? How much do you want to spend? We have got enough in the coffers here. We've got money. Mr. Stanton's got a lot of money, right? That ownership group is, man alive. It would be go. It would be not N-O. It would be G-O. Okay, it would be go.
Well, so you start talking about starting pitchers who were available on the market this year. There's not a ton of them, right? If you want to go and because I agree with everything you just said. You want to spend big money on Zach Greinke? You want to spend big money on Trevor Bauer? I don't think so. Let's move on past that one. No. You want to spend big money on a 40-year-old Justin Verlander?
Not really.
You want to spend big money on Clayton Kershaw? Now, I don't feel actually, I mean, he's an opt-out guy, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, he'll be 35, been one of the best pitchers in baseball. You really want to make a splash?
Nope.
I don't know if you can do it. I would say that I would do that. I would say that is right in line with the age of Verlander when they made that deal. That, to me, would be the thing. I don't know if you can do it. I don't know if you'll get to free agency or any of those things. But to me, that would be, the, you know, you want to make a move and show you're serious? All right, go 5 years on Clayton Kershaw.
Okay.
He doesn't do it, I don't think, but it's worth a conversation.
I had some tub time last night.
Oh, no.
Yes, I did. I had some tub time. I was thinking about this. Just kind of got your email. Knew it'd be just you and I, right? You like the old days, just you and me making it work today. No Howdy, no Kyle. We just got to make this happen. So I had some deep tub time. I had some thinking about this and the Mariners. I told you, I had a wedding. We were there. It was awesome. Neat series win against the Blue Jays. Thought about maybe pieces they could add. I think it's time for Mr. Stanton to pick up the phone and tell Theo Epstein, Gio, you're coming here. It's time to go. Whatever it takes. And even more, I'll give you an equivalency in NFL, and people hate this when I go baseball to football, but I'm going to do it. Urban Meyer got to a point where he couldn't say no.
So you want to get rid of, you just said you wanted to re-sign DePoto.
Jerry's still here.
Nah, it's not going to work.
He's still here.
You can't do that.
Yeah, that's okay.
No, you can't. You've already hired the president of business ops.
She's in business.
Right, but then you know. I just don't think that works.
You think Jerry says I won't work with Theo Epstein?
Yes. I think Jerry says I've reached a point in my career where I need to be president of baseball operations. I'm not going to go work under Theo Epstein, and no
okay.
chance. I love the idea. I love the idea of going to get Theo, but
then
I think I'll still go
get Theo.
And let Jerry go.
He's done it before.
Yeah. So you're willing to let Jerry, absolutely. You're willing to let Jerry go try to go get Theo. So you're going to wait till
Urban Meyer got to a point where Urban Meyer said, you know what? This is too good a deal. If I say no to this, I will never coach in the NFL. I've got an owner that's desperate, that's spending huge money. I got more cap space than any team ever. I got the number one pick in Trevor Lawrence. If Urban Meyer said no to the Jags, he would never say yes to any other opportunity. I think I can make a decent parallel. You've got the number one farm system in the league. I'll use a bunch of your points. You've got a competitive, strong culture. You've got true star power on the horizon with young players. You've got an owner that is so committed and dying to win. You have a fan base that has shown you in the past they will show up, and they will show up big. If Theo Epstein, oh, and by the way, it's a progressive guy, you know, that I think enjoys that. He also has a market that's fairly progressive, a president on the baseball business side that said, yeah, we want to be the most progressive in the league.
I think you're missing your best selling point, which is he gets to be closer to Eddie Vedder.
There you go. And he and Eddie, and you know, Eddie can play for him. You can broker a deal. Eddie, you got to have 20 concerts a year.
I like where you're going, Brock. I understand it.
If Theo says no to the Mariners with these pieces that are set up here, what other team could he say yes to?
No, I don't think he would. I love your thought. I think Theo wants to be the commissioner of baseball.
Interesting.
I think he wants to be the next commissioner. And so he's working with Major League Baseball right now and trying to help fix the game a little bit. Mm. It's not like the current commissioner is supremely popular. I think that's what he wants to do, because I think Theo sets his sights so high.
Okay.
Now, rebuilding and getting the Mariners, I think if he had taken over like the Mariners a couple of years ago and said, I get to do the whole thing myself.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know whether he's, I don't know. Theo's never been the bring me on at the end guy to get me over the top. Somebody else has done a lot of the heavy lifting and I'm going to get you over the top.
Even in Boston?
No, he did a lot of the heavy lifting. He did a lot of the heavy lifting.
Chicago, there. He certainly did.
Yeah, I don't know that Theo is the, hey, someone else has done the work and I'm going to now take it to the next level. I just don't see that happening. I love your thinking of go for the jugular. I'm with you on that. I don't know that that's his rep. I don't know that he says yes to that.
Okay.
To be perfectly honest with you. Although, if you're John Stanton, you have to ask. You have to have reached out to him at some point here in the last year. And I got to imagine that happened, right? And that before they went and hired a business president and decided to split everything up, they at least had some conversations with Theo, at least reached out to him and found out whether or not he was interested. How could you not?
Yeah.
So I love your thinking. I don't think it's a reality. And I believe what Jerry did at the deadline, looking at it now, looks pretty darn brilliant in bringing in this Toro kid who's been the best player in baseball since getting here. And he looks like he's your replacement for Kyle Seager.
Mm-hmm.
You get that for 30 innings you were going to throw of Kendall Graveman? Man, that's a huge deal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that I really like the direction that they're going.
Yeah.
I feel pretty darn good about what Jerry's done, and I feel good about giving him the opportunity to finish the job. All right, Brock, let's buzz around the NFL. Ton of good stories right now, and let's start with the two rookies that are getting all kinds of attention for their first preseason game, Justin Fields and Trey Lance. What are you buying? What are you not buying right now?
I'm buying poise, kind of back to our Seahawk, and probably why I was a little too negative on that Monday with Danny and Gallant was because I had just kind of a myopic look at it. But when you broaden it out and you look around the league and you realize, yeah, there was a lot of bad football, Mike. If you watch the games and you flipped around, the Seahawks were not alone.
I watched some of that Bears game. It was not pretty.
It was not good. No. It was a step up from the XFL, but not much. I mean, I think the Seattle Dragons could have given a lot of these teams a run for their money this weekend because you had a lot of twos and threes and fours playing around the league. So, if I'm this is not Russell Wilson going up against starters back in the day and playing into the third quarter, even against, pretty decent players back in the day, because that's what you did back in the day. You played your starters into the third quarter of preseason games. Not going to happen anymore. So I'd be careful to just rush to any grand conclusions and celebrate and say, yeah, man, this guy can do it. Because it's going to be a totally different world week number one in the regular season for these guys going up against the number ones.
Yeah, and I saw someone point out that Trey Lance, for all of the numbers he put up, if you take away the 80-yard touchdown, and there's some suggestion
like
that it was just blown coverage, it was a disaster.
Yes.
So we'll see. I do think both guys are exciting, though.
Both guys are poised.
Yeah.
And
they look like they belong out
there.
That's
right.
And you got to give them the job. I would say in both cases, you just give them. Certainly in Chicago. In Chicago, you have to give them the job.
I think in both those spots, you're going to start Andy Dalton and Jimmy Garoppolo. The minute the wheels start to wobble,
you can't start
then you bring in the hero.
No, you can't start Andy Dalton. He wasn't even a starter last year. Like, he went to go be a backup. I don't think you can do that, honestly. I think with Garoppolo, you at least have a case to be made.
With the Super Bowl.
The Bears need to. I get it. As I said, you have a case to be made with Garoppolo. With Andy Dalton, no way. You got to go Justin Fields. That is the future of that franchise. It is Russell Wilson time there, right? Like, it's the same kind of deal. They have a decent team, right?
Yeah.
They're not a bad team.
No.
They need a quarterback. Same thing they've needed for, my entire life. All 43 years of my life.
Yeah, if I'm a Bears fan, I'm excited. I'm excited about what I've seen and read and heard in training camp and then getting his opportunity. And it started a little bit slow, but that was good to see him kind of dig out of it. As you know, and we talked about this leading into the draft, big Justin Fields fan right here.
Same.
Big fan.
Same. I think that will work out very well in Chicago. Trade time usually here in the next couple of weeks right before the season. Where would the Seahawks be looking?
Secondary. And in particular, I think a Denver Broncos team that's got four or five corners, drafted one instead of Justin Fields at number 9 in the draft, Patrick Surtain, pick 6 in his opener, big one for him, are going to have, now some of them are not ideal size. DJ Reed, not ideal size. But watching that game, when watching Trey Flowers against a backup receiver and a third string quarterback not make plays on the football, discouraging. And it's why he was benched last year. And on the other side, Witherspoon was not terribly physical, didn't come up and fill and play with violence.
He's little.
Skinny.
Like, he's skinny. Seeing him in person, I was like, oh, he's little. Yeah, that doesn't mean he won't be physical in a meaningful game, but I was struck by how skinny he was.
So whether it is Denver, whether it's other places like DJ Reed, he's a guy that can attack the football. He can play the ball, Mike. Outside of him,
He didn't play in that game.
No, he did not. He played the whole second half of last year and was your best corner.
Well, you saw him. I mean, like, that's my point, is that, like, hard to judge just based on what we saw in that game, because all of a sudden you put DJ Reed in there and maybe that changed. I don't know. Yeah,
no, it's not hard for me to judge that is the weakest position on their roster.
I would agree. I think the depth of receiver is pretty weak, too.
Yes, and we'll see. Eskridge is supposed to get healthy this week, and hopefully he can hit the ground running, and they've been super, super guarded and cautious with him. But if there is a deadline move, if there is a six-rounder for somebody, I hope it is a competent DB from somewhere around the league that has had a little seasoning, kind of like Justin Coleman, kind of like DJ Reed, kind of like those guys that have played a little bit elsewhere that need to come in here that have any level of ball skill, because I don't think Trey has it. I don't think Witherspoon has it. I don't think you have any depth that has it. So you need somebody that can play the ball on that end.
I was doing my Twitter thing and following my people I like around the country, and I saw my buddy Carrington in Kansas City, who we've had on the show before, mentioned that he was worried that Josh Allen was going to go ahead of Patrick Mahomes on the top 100 list. And my response was, Josh Allen's in the top 100? No.
You're so silly. You're still holding to that.
Yeah. There are a couple of people in Buffalo who really took it seriously. Obviously, sure, he's in the top 100, but we don't think he's actually going to. Like, what, he got $258 million? What?
Million.
Come on. What a terrible idea.
Player in the history
Get
of the league.
Out of here. How is Josh Allen the highest paid player in the history of football?
All timing, buddy.
How does that even make sense?
Like Matthew Stafford, just like Kirk Cousins, reset the bar, right? At the right time, he hit it. Mahomes, I think Mahomes kicking himself on a 10-year deal.
I don't know, but my question, so with Josh Allen, does that money kick in this year or next year?
Yes, he is. He's kicking himself, yes.
Okay, but does that money kick in this year or next year for Allen?
Oh, I think it starts to accumulate afterwards. I think most teams have taken a page out
of the So they don't have to pay him this year, so they can still be good this year.
Yeah, and the cap is going to grow, and yeah, they should still be very good this year.
But then next year, you start to feel the effects of paying Josh Allen, who's not very good, that much money. What a complete! I'm sorry, I don't buy this at all.
I don't like Josh Allen.
No, I don't at all. He's a running back. I think he's a running back.
Even when he went like 29-31 against the Seahawks in the first half last year,
Brock.
What?
A running back could have gone 29-31 against the Seahawks that day, and that was his best day. Look, Josh Allen's better than I thought he was, obviously. I'm not ridiculous enough to think that, but I do believe that his accuracy issues, which have not entirely gone away, and inconsistency, will forever be a problem for him, especially in big games.
Well, you said it about Chicago your whole life. They've been looking for a quarterback, and they drafted Josh Allen, took a little bit of a flyer because the accuracy was a concern. It was very volatile. He showed flashes of brilliance early, but super, super volatile. Took him to the playoffs, took him to an AFC championship game, and he loves that place, and they love him. Mm-hmm. He's found a fit. He's a Northern California farmer who went to Wyoming and Laramie, and he's probably DNA-wise exactly what you need to be just loving life in
Buffalo. That's true. I would agree.
I'm the next Jim Kelly, and that's not easy to find in this day and age of a millennial that says, Buffalo is my home. Are you kidding me? I want to sign here. I love this place. They love me. The Bills Mafia is all for me. I'm big. I'm physical. I'm tough. I'm gritty. I'm everything that Buffalo is.
He is all of those things.
He is.
He just isn't a very accurate passer. and maybe that part of the game is gone again.
It's easier.
The game does change, and maybe it's changing on me. 20 years ago,
easy completions, Mike. 20 years ago,
they made a major change in the game. It ceased to be about big arms and the gunslingers, and it became about guys who could lead their team, be efficient, not throw picks, right, and be safe with the football. That was the major change that was made 20 years ago with Brady. Is it? has the game changed again? And am I not ready for that? Do I need to start opening up to the fact that that's not as important as it was?
And I would also contend, Mike, in those years, you had to throw 20-yard comebacks on a dot and 20-yard in routes. And it, you had Troy Aikman's of the world. You had to be Joe Montana's of the world. You had to be hyper, hyper accurate, right? Because you had to throw a lot of intermediate. What do you do now? Oh, here's a little bubble screen. Here's a little jet sweep. Here's a little screen. Here's a little ball out of my hand. Here's a little hitch route. Here's a little smoke route here. Oh, and then I'll take my shots down the field. You know, completion percentages are off the charts. They're 70% now because there's so many more gimmies in today's game and the spread and the space and everything else. And this dude's got a cannon, got an absolutely unique arm that has improved in his accuracy.
Well, maybe I'm wrong. I'm certainly open to that possibility. It's happened once or twice before. I still believe in my heart of hearts that accuracy is going to be his downfall. Mm-hmm. But he did throw for 70% last year. As you said, there's a lot of easy completions out there. He only had 10 picks.
Yep.
I just don't know whether I could spend 200. Like, if it were me, I couldn't spend that kind of money on Josh Allen.
If you're Buffalo and he went through 20-year drought of not having a guy, not making the playoffs, yeah. And now I've been to the playoffs and the AFC Championship game, and this fan base is just over the moon. Let's go.
I mentioned Brady. How much longer does Brady go? You just saw him.
I did.
Is it like 5 more years? Like, how many more years does he play?
He had a lot of hair, Mike.
Well, I do too. I'm not playing football.
No. I'm talking on the top of his head.
Yeah, me too.
He's got just skin. His skin looked just glowing.
Dude, I went to the barber. She's cutting my hair, and she does the thinning thing on the sides. I know. I'm a 43-year-old man who still gets my hair thinned because it's that thick. And she's like, this thing is like, it's like regenerating. Like, as soon as I cut it, I feel like I've thinned it, and it's there again. I was dying. I was like, wait till you try to wax my back.
He's going to play this year. I think he's on a year-to-year deal, man.
But how many more does he play?
If I bet, he plays this year and maybe one more.
Okay.
He's 44.
Yeah.
He's a year younger than me. He plays this year.
You think next year
plays
is
45.
It?
Yeah.
How many more Super Bowls does he win at that time? Two?
Gracious.
Close it out with two more.
Amazing.
That would just be crazy. All right, buddy. This has been a lot of fun. Despite a tough preseason opener, a lot of fun here on the podcast. We will certainly be back to do it again next week. Until then, the hay
is in the barn.
See everybody.
Guys, it's the chopper!